ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, Text Number 52. This does not have a purport, so I will read the Sanskrit, the translation, and then go on to 53, which we will then do together. Okay?
Divakyashayane nyasya vasudevo tadarikam patimucha paduloham aste purva var avrta.
Translation. Vasudev placed the female child on the bed of Devaki, bound his legs with the iron shackles, that means his own, Vasudeva's, and thus remained there as before. Text 53. We can do this together.
Yashoda Nanda Patnicha Jatam Paramabhudyata Natalingam Parishranta Nidraya Pagatha Smrti Yashoda Nanda Patnicha Jatam Paramabhudyata Natalingam Parishranta Nidraya Pagatha Smrti Yashoda Nanda Patni Cha Jatam Paramabhudyate Nathalingam Parishranta Nidraya Pagata Smrti.
Please chant.
Please.
patni chaam satam phalam abhujyata
Yashoda.
Yashoda,
Krishna's mother in Gokul. Nanda Patni, the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Cha, also Jatam, a child was born. Param, the supreme person. Abhudyata, could understand. Na, not tat lingam, whether the child was male or female. Parishranta, because of too much labor. Nidraya, when overwhelmed with sleep. Apagata smrti, having lost consciousness. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Purport. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva were intimate friends, and so were their wives, Yashoda and Devaki. Actually, it goes even further. The Nanda and Maharaj and Vasudeva, actually, they're half-brothers. I don't know the full genealogy of it, but I did read it in the Bhagavatam. They were intimate friends, and so were their wives, Yashoda and Devaki. Although their names were different, they were practically non-different personalities. The only difference is that Devaki was able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had been born to her and had now changed into Krishna, whereas Yashoda was not able to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Yashoda was such an advanced devotee that she never regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply loved him as her own child. Devaki, however, knew from the very beginning that although Krishna was her son, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Question, how did she know this? Raise your hand. How did she know? Go ahead. Yes. Yes, he appeared as Lord Vishnu. And Devaki saw this. And Vasudeva saw this, so they saw that he was the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So, however, Devaki knew from the very beginning that although Krishna was her son, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, no one regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When something very wonderful happened because of Krishna's activities, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and the others, they were surprised, but they never considered their son, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes they suggested that some great demigod had appeared there as Krishna in such an exalted status of devotional service. A devotee forgets the position of Krishna and intensely loves the Supreme Personality of Godhead without understanding his position. This is called Kevala Bhakti and is distinct from the stages of jnana and jnanamayi bhakti. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet, and also beg for the prayers of all the Vaishnavas here and on the internet, that I may say something beneficial and useful for all of us, including myself. Since I'm dependent upon the Supreme Lord, dependent upon the Vaishnavas for the success of anything I do in devotional service. So here we have several interesting points which are being made. And the first I'd like to take is the fact of Vasudev leaving the prison and traveling to Gokul and then returning. The Bhagavatam does a very brief synopsis of it, but some of the other Puranas, Garga Samhita, Brahma Vaivarta Purana, they go into more elaborate details as to what Vasudev had to confront. So we have to see the scene. I mean, we can say, well, there was a big storm raging, but the way it's described, it tells us somewhat about the character of Vasudev. It was a tremendous storm raging, actually. Rain was teeming. There was thunder. There was lightning. And birds went shrieking through the night. It was dark. You could not see any stars, or even the moon was blocked at that time due to all the clouds that were covering and pouring its rain on the ground. There were jackals howling. There were elephants trumpeting, because when it rains like that, even the animals become slightly fearful. And they express their fear by the only means that they have, through their voices. And snakes were seen wriggling along the ground, looking for their snake holes. So it was very fearsome, very terrible, very frightening situation. So here was Vasudev with this beautiful newborn baby in his arms, and he had to go out into this. And he stepped out, quite peacefully and calmly, although there was undoubtedly a certain small degree of anxiety there. Not for himself, but for the fact that he was carrying Krishna, and he wanted to make sure that Krishna was completely protected from this terrible rainstorm. Now, when Vasudeva went out, he didn't take the position of a not very advanced devotee. He took the position really of an advanced devotee, not thinking it was advanced, but his position was that, well, this is the service that Krishna has asked me to perform, because Krishna had asked him to take him, Krishna, across the river, over to Gokul, over to Nanda Maharaj's home, and exchange him with the daughter which had just been born to Yashoda. So he just took that as an instruction. He didn't start thinking, as sometimes devotees may, well, why is Krishna doing this to me? Why is he making it so difficult? After all, I'm holding the Supreme Lord. I don't want anything terrible or bad or harmful to happen to him. And yet, look at what he's doing. I mean, you've got the jackals over here. You've got the elephants over there. You've got the snakes wriggling. I mean, why are you doing this to me, Krishna? He doesn't speak like that. He knows that whatever is being presented to him is being arranged by Krishna for whatever purpose it might be, and it is his business to simply go through it, to do it, to confront it, to as best as he can, successfully fulfill the order of the Supreme Lord. So he doesn't start speculating as to why is Krishna is doing this, and maybe Krishna should not have doing this, maybe Krishna is not forgetting my wonderful devotional service. He's not thinking like that. He's simply thinking, this is what I must do, and I will do it. And this is the attitude that we have to adopt. This is for Krishna. This is his plan. And let me not speculate as to the whys that he is presenting me or causing me to go through these terrible difficulties at this point. But in any event, he simply goes through it. And finally, when he comes to the Yamuna, it's in a terrible ferment. Waves very high up in the air. Loud sound, noise, lightning, thunder all around him. So how is he going to get across holding his little beloved Krishna? How to get across this? So he just waits. He knows that Krishna is in charge. And Krishna has to make an arrangement through his great servant Yogamaya. And that's exactly what happens. So the ferment river, the turbulent river, instead of flowing forward as it normally does, it stops at a point and creates a wall. The water does just not go any further. It just keeps building up higher and higher and higher, allowing Vasudev a pathway by which he can cross the river. So he had confidence. He didn't know what was going to happen, but he felt that Krishna was in charge, and he would not have given him an order that would be so impossible that the child he was holding would, quote-unquote, die. So that's what happened. The water was only about a foot and a half. But interestingly enough, as he was crossing, and it was very dark, and he was looking to the bank, Krishna slipped out of his hands. And Vasudeva became very, very upset and agitated because he couldn't see very well. And he's looking here and there, and he's feeling with his arms, swishing the water around, trying his best to find Krishna. It was a moment of deep, great anxiety. Finally, he felt something on the back of his leg, and he looked down, and he felt it, and it was Krishna. So he took him, lifted him up, held him close to his chest, kissed his head, and then marched forward onto the bank, and then went to the home of Nanda Maharaj, and then entered the room in which Yashoda was resting. Now, she had given birth to a girl. That girl is Yogamaya. But she had also given birth to a little boy named Krishna. So one may ask, Krishna? Now, wait a minute. Vasudeva is holding Krishna. How could Krishna be also on the bed next to Yogamaya? Doesn't make sense. But it makes perfect sense because there are two aspects to Krishna's personality. There is the Vrindavan aspect, and there is the Vasudeva aspect. They are two different personalities, although they're the same one person. Vrindavan Krishna, or Krishna Vrindavan, is the playful, lovable, cute, huggable child that everyone falls in love with, including the cows and the calves. They just look at him and they become spellbound and they stand still. Their ears kind of raised up, especially when Krishna later on plays the flute. So he frolicsome, playful. This is Vrindavan Krishna. We should always remember this. And then there's Vasudev Krishna. When Krishna has to confront demons, which he will be doing soon, he does not fight them in the mood of Vrindavan Krishna. He fights them in the mood of what is known as Vasudev Krishna, the fighter, the general, the person who wields weapons, the person who kills demons. That's what he does in that particular mentality. So the point is that even when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, actually he really never leaves Vrindavan. This is mentioned that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Doesn't leave him, leave Vrindavan, because although his physical form leaves, there is what is known as a bhava form. Bhava form is the form of ecstasy, which anyone who is a devotee of Krishna, who loves Krishna, who wants the presence of Krishna, will enable him or her to feel that holy ecstatic presence. Bhava means ecstasy. And therefore, one who remains in Vrindavan feels the holy presence of Krishna, even though the physical presence has gone. And they're moaning and bemoaning and lamenting the loss of that physical presence because they want to hold his hand. They want to hug him. They want to look at him. They want to serve him. They want to offer him sweetmeats. They want to play music for him. And they need a physical presence. But his ecstatic presence is still there. And they're feeling that ecstatic presence. And so they're feeling this ecstasy in separation, which intensifies the ecstasy. More ecstasy than normal because there is sorrow within it. When we cry, especially over someone who's left us, who's very dear to us, the result is that it's very intense. And equally so is the intensity of the ecstasy that they were feeling. So they were feeling what is called love in separation at that time, which is even more powerful, stronger than love in meeting, as strange as that may be, sound. So I just wanted to make that particular point. That then Vasudeva, of course, one other point is that Yogamaya, who is lying on the bed next to Yashoda, prevented Vasudeva from seeing Vrindavan Krishna. He didn't see him. It would have been quite a surprise when you're walking in with Krishna and then you see Krishna there and you look here. You remember Lord Brahma when he began to, seeing all the different Vishnu forms? He became very, very discombobulated. He didn't know what was going on. He couldn't figure it out. He was almost having a nervous breakdown. But Krishna eventually enabled him to understand it. So therefore, Vasudeva did not see Vrindavan Krishna. Then when Vasudeva placed... Vasudeva placed the Krishna that he was holding down on the bed, those two Krishnas merged together. They came together as one. So therefore, when it was necessary, as I mentioned a few moments ago, for Krishna to fight demons, the Vasudeva personality manifested and would fight with them and kill them. And then shortly after, the Vrindavan Krishna would manifest and would become frolicsome and playful and loving and just like an ordinary cowherd boy. So the cowherd boys would sometimes be completely perplexed or bewildered when they would see Krishna fighting. They didn't know he had so much power. And then after he would be finished by a act of Krishna's mercy, they would forget his great power, and they would again see Krishna as just an ordinary cowherd boy whom they could play with, whom they could fight with. You know, they would play blind man's bluff, they would play tag, they would charge, run after bird shadows, they would pull the tails of monkeys who would climb up the tree and they would climb up after them. This was frolicsome, childish, playful Vrindavan Krishna. And that's what the cowherd boys wanted. They didn't want to think of him as a great, powerful, amazing killer of demons. So, therefore, I just wanted to make this very clear. This comes from, you will not find that in the Bhagavatam, but when you read the works of the Acharya, Jiva Goswami, Acharyas, Vijiva Goswami, and Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami, this understanding and this description is given there. So I don't want anybody to think that I made this up. It's not made up at all. And it is there. And those of you who have the latest Back to Godhead magazine will find the complete story there written very well, very nicely by Satyaraj Prabhu. So I recommend that because it gives a clear insight into this particular phenomenon of Vrindavan Krishna and Vasudeva Krishna. So that was the first point. The second point is that the first point was that Vasudeva did not complain, he did not grouse, he didn't feel that this was beneath him to do these things. He just did it with love and devotion, dedication, picked up the little girl, put her in his arms, and again went back to the prison and then shackled himself, and Yogamaya caused all the doors to shut, and that was that. And then, of course, later on, as we will learn, Krishna begins to, that will come a little bit later, but the baby starts to cry, and then the the men who were the doorkeepers who were fast asleep as a result of Yoga Maya's act upon them, causing them to sleep, in fact, and causing everyone in the palace to fall asleep so that no one would see what was going on. So they woke up and they tell Kamsa, and Kamsa would, of course, soon act. So what I'd like to deal with is the last part of the purport, which really is very important, because it gives us an understanding of three different stages of spiritual advancement. Sometimes we say, well, he's a pure devotee, or she's a pure devotee. But there are different levels, different stages of pure devotee. And what I'd like to do is, as it is mentioned here in the last, if I can find it, the last, yes. This is called a Kevala Bhakti and is distinct from the stages of Jnana and Jnanamayi Bhakti. The word this means that type of bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, is completely pure and free of what I will talk about right now. First of all, the word jnana in this case means simple knowledge. And simple knowledge means that one can perceive transcendental bliss without variety. This is the early stages of bhakti. And one thinks, does not really worship the Lord as such with much feeling to the form. The worship is to the qualities or the attributes that Krishna has, such as his greatness, his glory, his omniscience, his opulence, his omnipotence. This is power. This is grandeur. This is greatness. So one may worship in that sense, that God is great. God is amazing. God is astonishing. Look at all he's doing. Look at these big mountains that he's made. Look at all these trees. Look at these earthquakes. This is incredible. This is the power. So a person may worship the Lord in that stage, and that is called the jnana stage, or the simple knowledge stage. And if it is done sincerely and done with devotion, one may slowly but surely move to the next stage. As it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He's equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. So it says, in that state, he attains it. This state, which is called the knowledge state, if it is practiced, and is practiced purely, purely in the sense that one truly is always amazed and awed and looks up to and reveres and venerates the greatness of Krishna. That leads to the next step, which is called Jnanamayi. Now, Jnanamayi is here. It's mixed with knowledge. What's mixed with knowledge? Well, the love is mixed with knowledge. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is commenting upon in a few times, and Vishvanatha Chakravarti is commenting upon also, that the love of Devaki and Vasudev for Krishna is in that platform, the Jnanamayi platform. In other words, it's they love him totally and completely, but there is some restriction. There is some restraint. They know that he is the Supreme Lord. Knowing he is the Supreme Lord, you cannot help but feel awe and reverence and greatness and glory and wanting to bow down. That's not the mood of the gopis. They're not bowing down. They're not throwing themselves at his feet. They're just saying, Krishna, we want you. We want to hold your hands. We want to cook for you. We want to play music for you. We want to be close to you. No bowing. So a different mood, completely different feeling. So that's the way it's described in the purport, love mixed with knowledge. One realizes the transcendental opulences of the personality of Godhead, his beauty, his wealth, his strength, his fame, his knowledge and renunciation, with loving exchanges. As opposed to the jnana There's no loving exchanges. Sometimes those persons even become impersonalists, but not necessarily. It can be an early stage of bhakti. So when there is both, on the one hand, as I said before, Vasudeva is carrying his lovable, adorable, huggable child. Well, all you want to do is just hold him tight and protect him. That's the nature. But on the other hand, you then remember, wait a minute, he's the Supreme Lord of the universe. He's holding up everything. He's maintaining. He's responsible for that big mountain over there, for the river that is rushing, the lightning. That's his making. So you've got a conflict there. So that's why it's not considered the most perfectly pure manifestation of love. Think of a faucet, okay? And when you turn the knob and the water comes out of the faucet, if there is no rust in the inside of the pipe area, then the water comes clean and clear, and you can drink it, and it just tastes good like water is supposed to. But if it's filled with rust, then when the water comes out, there's some hindrance. It doesn't come out smoothly. It may come out in spurts, like... I mean, I've noticed that happen in different times. So when you get the rust out, then what happens is that it comes out smoothly. Similarly, in this particular type of jnanamayi, this is the flow of love with a little bit of rust in it. The rust being the appreciation of the Lord's opulences, his glory, his grandeur, his greatness, his amazingness. So a higher stage is when one no longer even thinks of Krishna as being the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada mentions that the residents of Vrindavan, when they would see Krishna do something absolutely amazing, they would not ascribe it to Krishna. They would either say that some demigod is assisting Krishna in this, or they might say that Lord Vishnu is somehow possessing Krishna and he's doing it through Krishna. But our little lovable Krishna is always little lovable Krishna. He can't do all that stuff, but they can do it, and they can use Krishna. And since Krishna is a very good boy, very sweet, very lovable and huggable, as I said, then, of course, he uses Krishna. When Krishna eats up the big fire that goes, you know, near the bank of the Yamuna, who swallows the fire? Well, it must be Lord Vishnu. And who's killing Bakasura? Must be Lord Vishnu. Because our little Krishna doesn't have all those powers. He's just a little, weak little child who steals butter, pinches our baby's cheeks, urinates on our floors. Not supposed to do that. But that's our Krishna. So how could he do those amazing, absolutely stunning things? So that's the... therefore, Vasudev and Devaki, they obviously have not come to that position that the gopis of Vrindavan, the gopas of Vrindavan, the Mother Yashoda and also Nanda have come to. Their only thought is to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, to play with Krishna, to take care of Krishna, to make sure that Krishna is not being harmed, protect Krishna. That's their only thought. And that brings them great ecstasy and great bliss. More rope, she tied a knot upon it, and then again try to tie it around and Krishna's waist and tie him to the mortar. But again, it was 2 inches too short. She said, what's going on here? How could it be 2 inches too short? The rope, she had already had 30 feet of rope, and Krishna's waist was no more than about 15, 16 inches. So it was a bit of a conflict in her mind. More ropes were brought. And Mother Yashoda began sweating. But she would not give up the task. Because she was going to make sure her little boy grew up to be a good boy. Isn't that ironic? Here, Krishna is the source of all righteousness, the source of all purity, source of all piety. And she's going to make him become a good boy. Isn't that nice of her? So Krishna is playing with them in that very... lovable fashion. Finally, when he saw that Mother Yashoda was sweating, perspiring, all the flower garland on her
hair had fallen down, and she was wondering, what is going on here? No one can tie Krishna. No one can bind him. He is unbindable, untieable, because he is the supreme Lord, who is more powerful, greater, more glorious than anyone and ever anything. So who can bind him? It is said that the devotees of the Lord, they're the only ones who can bind him, and they bind him with what? They bind him with, yes, with their love. And the stronger their love, the more bound he becomes. In fact, he says to the gopis at one point, I can never repay you for what you've done to me. Ever. The only thing you should just be satisfied with your own devotional activities. Because in that activity, you will be feeling such ecstasy, such bliss, such fulfillment. And that is what he gives them, himself. What could be better than that? Krishna gives himself to those who surrender. As he says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respect. Surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode, Krishna says. After many births and deaths, he who is acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all there is. So Krishna says, you surrender unto me and you will get something. You give up your ego, give up your body, give up your mind, give up your thoughts, give up your car, give up your home. Consider everything that you own to be mine. And once you do that, once you understand that it's mine and you are simply the custodian, the caretaker of it, and you take care of it as not your property, but Krishna says, my property, you'll have no attachment. There'll be no feeling if somebody leans on your car, hey, get off my car, or that. You won't be feeling like that. Or if the car gets a fender bender, you won't be upset. Many people get upset if there's a little fender bender because they're identified themselves with their car. This is my body. With this body, I earned money. With that money, I bought a car. The car and me are non-different. So, if you lean against the car, or if I get a fender bender, somebody hits me from behind, I feel like my body has been hurt. And since my body is the means of further and further sense gratification, I feel like my car, which is the means of sense gratification also, has been threatened. Anytime sense gratification is threatened, we become angry, become upset, become disturbed, become shaken. Because that is our life, that is our only happiness. False happiness, worthless happiness, useless happiness. The only real happiness there is that which comes from within. As Krishna says, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense enjoyment, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he enjoys the happiness within. That is real happiness. That is true happiness. That is happiness now and forever. And that is what we have to always be striving for. All these little frills that come from false happiness here and there, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, and so forth, they're only here, temporary, momentary, and then gone. But the happiness which comes from the connection, when we are, as Krishna says, one who is connected with me in Krishna consciousness, one who is connected with me in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence. One who is not connected with me in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So Krishna is saying, we're all connected to Krishna, but are we Krishna? Are we consciously connected with him? Or are we unconsciously? If it's unconsciously, that's the same as an animal. Animals are connected, but they don't feel their connection with Krishna. So that means, as Krishna says, whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we offer or give away, do it for me. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances, worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. No doubt about it. And he says to Arjuna, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. And at the same time, perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. So Krishna gives us the method to attain, to achieve, to acquire this transcendental bliss that is being talked about here. The bliss of the gopis, the bliss of Vasudeva and Devaki, and also the bliss of those who are starting out on the spiritual path, jnani, simple knowledge. So I've covered as much as I can on this particular, within this time limit. Thank you all very much for enabling me and allowing me to share this with you. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments? Yeah, oh, I see a lot of hands going up. Yes, Anila Madhava Prabhu. Can somebody get the microphone so that those on the internet, it'll be coming. Oh, wait one second, he's coming. There he comes.
It seems that the love that the devotees of Vrindavan have for Krishna, it shows that they don't think he's God, you know, but they love him. And also the demons, they don't think Krishna's God. So is the difference between the two that one is envious and one, the other is loving, or is there more to that?
Yes, you answered your own question. Thank you. That's exactly it. Yes, they're envious. They want to be God, so how can they accord anyone else the position of God when they're always thinking we're God, or we're connected with like our Ravana or our Krishna, our Kamsa, and therefore we're connected with him. We're God through them. So yes, it's a matter of envy, wanting to be top dog, so to speak. With the devotees, they're not interested in being top dog. They just want to be a little puppy dog, which Krishna can play with any which way he wants with. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Maharaj, so if Yashodamayi loves Krishna and she doesn't know that he's God, like unconditionally she loves him, what would be the difference with any mother? Any mother would love her son like extremely more than anything else, yeah. Right? Especially, you know, I can imagine how like attractive is Krishna, baby boy Krishna, right? So it's not surprising that Yashodamayi loves him. You know, if she doesn't know that she is God, he's God, you know, it's like it's natural for any mother. What's the difference of Yashodamayi's love with any mother's love?
Well, the difference is in the purity of it. It's completely pure. She had achieved a state in which I've already described, where total surrender, you see. Whereas parents today, as you mentioned, they love their children, but they often there are a few little strings attached to that. If you don't do this, I punish you. If you don't do this, I wash your mouth with soap. Stop doing it. You know, there's a lot of lordship there. Although Yashoda Maishi, she disciplines Krishna, but not as a lord, just as a simple, loving parent, so that he will grow up to be a good boy. It's not that you act like disobedient, people will find out, and that will reflect upon our reputation. She's not concerned like that, you see. So that's the difference between purity in as a mother, not this Mataji, you have a...
Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for your class.
A little bit louder.
Sure.
Old man's ears.
Thank you for your class. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
So my question is about the development of that kind of love that you're speaking about, that Mother Yashoda has, or that the residents of Vrindavan have. Is that something that is developed from a stage of awe and reverence? Or is it that we have our particular relationship with Krishna,
yeah.
and for certain people that will come about, and for certain people it will,
yeah,
not? Or is it something that we can actually like actively desire? And
it is both. Some persons, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that there are persons who are, for example, in the Vaikuntha Loka. Vaikuntha Loka is basically awe and reverence and service. It's not parental, it's not friendship, and it's not romantic, conjugal. But he mentions that if a person, due to somehow his sincerity in his worship, he develops greater and greater love, he gets promoted from the Vaikuntha planet
to the Goloka planet. That's also Vaikuntha, but it's the topmost position of Vaikuntha. So, yes, one can be promoted, one can be gradually transformed, depending upon the intensity, depending upon the desire of the devotee. If you desire to love Krishna more, you desire to want to be closer to Krishna, whereas previously you didn't. Okay, so you've come to a different level in which Krishna is so attractive. He's so compelling. He's so drawing to you. He's like the magnet that pulls you. Whereas before, you were far away, so the magnet does not have so much attractive power. So yes, it can be developed, and then some persons may simply stay in that position for millions of years, in the awe and reverence position, or in the servitorship position. That may be too. But they also receive, as it's mentioned, much transcendental bliss, but nowhere near the intensity or the degree that is experienced by Yashoda and Nanda and the gopis and the gopas like that. That's a very special position. But yes, one can advance. There's no question. In other words, Krishna is a fair player. He allows everybody to come up if that's what they want, and that's what they will get. Okay? Another person who would want one. Oh, Swavas Prabhu, please. Now you can correct all my errors. I'm waiting. Hit me.
Wonderful class. I just thought I'd make a little comment to her question. And that is that's the uniqueness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Sankirtan movement. That if you just simply surrender to this particular process that Lord Chaitanya gave us, you can go to the highest realms of Krishna consciousness.
There you are.
So that's all we have to do. Chant Hare Krishna, follow the process, and you can go back home, back to Godhead, Goloka Vrindavan.
Absolutely. See, our process is become perfect in our awe and reverence, and that becomes a precursor of becoming perfect in the next stage and perfect in the next stage. But we're not concerned about stages. That's something that just goes on internally. Our concern is, am I loving Krishna enough? Have I done the very best that I could? Could I have given more? That's our concern. And when we think in those terms, you see, Krishna will give us the energy, give us the vigor, give us the vitality that we may need to make up the difference from what we would like as opposed to what we did. Okay, I think this time has gone far enough. Thank you all very, very much. Hare Krishna.